From Brennan to the Boca Chiel, from Lummi to La Push, and from the lordly Sawduck to lovely Duckabush. From Samish to Sammamish, Suquamish to Quilicene, the climate is so friendly, it's a land that's evergreen.
Hello, and welcome to the History of the Evergreen State podcast. I'm your host and producer, John C., and thank you for joining me today for episode 143, Index on the Skykomish. The indigenous people who lived along the Snohomish, Skykomish, and Snoqualmie River basins were allotted land on a single reservation that was established at Tulalip, northwest of Everett, as a result of the Treaty of Point Elliott, which was signed in January of 1855 in Mukilteo. That marked the beginning of the end for the Skykomish people, the extensive group of families after whom their river was named. Today, there are no people who identify themselves solely as Skykomish. When European settlers arrived in the area in the 1850s, there were 7 village sites located between the present-day towns of Monroe and Index. The village located closest to the point where the south and north branches of the Skykomish River converged was the most eastern one. It is hardly unexpected that residents of this region, which receives an annual rainfall of approximately 100 inches on average, referred to members of the Skykomish people as the Fern People. This was the site of a permanent winter hamlet known as Zazusalt, which derives its name from the word sasus, which refers to a saw-billed duck. Here was placed a big potlatch house. Elders of the tribes that established at Tulalip told anthropologist Colin Tweddle that the Index people were the genuine Skykomish tribe, rather wild. They would come up in canoes and suddenly be gone, hid in the rocks by Index. The residents of Skykomish had already seen numerous prospectors passing through on their way into the heart of the mountains by the time the Gunn family, who founded the town of Index, arrived from Kansas in the year 1890 to establish themselves there. As early as 1859, Emery C. Ferguson and Edson Cady made their way past the future location of the town to a mountain pass. This was a path that the Skykomish people had taken in the past when they traveled to and traded with other tribes on the eastern side of the Cascades. After naming the location Cady Pass, Ferguson and Cady were unable to proceed with their quest for an alternate path to the goldfield located along the Similkameen River because of the severe snowfall. They went back in the spring to try and enhance the route, but mining in eastern Washington had stopped being profitable, so the proposal was quickly scrapped. Prospectors searching for gold, silver, lead, and copper in the late 1880s made their way to the mining districts of Silver Creek by following the rocky track that Ferguson and Cady had established. In April of 1890, Amos D. Gunn, a miner, and his wife Persis purchased a squatter's claim that contained a small log cabin that was serving as a miner's hotel and called it Cady Lodge. They constructed a larger building and became the primary hostelry and supply depot for those heading east to the towns of Galena, Mineral City, and Monte Cristo. Index Mountain left an impression on Persis Gunn, who described it as looking like an index finger pointed toward heaven. When a post office was constructed in December of 1891, the name Index was selected due to her influence. It does seem like an index finger when viewed from the west, however, it was renamed Mount Baring in 1917, and the mountain to the west that was formerly known as West Index Mount was renamed to Mount Index. Not only did the miners' demand for lodging and supplies contribute to the growth and prosperity of the Gunns' town, but the surveys that were done in 1890 for the Great Northern Railway also played a role. Amos and his son Luther were recruited by John F. Stevens to horseback a survey crew up to Cady Pass in tandem with Stevens' survey of Stevens Pass, which was ultimately selected for the transcontinental line. The construction of tracks from 1891 through 1893 contributed to the increase in the number of laborers who required lodgings. Gunn laid up the town that would become Index on the 25th of April, 1893. Due to the success of his hotel and packing business, he was now able to sell lots for between $25 and $50 each. His daughter, who lived from 1880 to 1963, reported that the population had grown to 500. A makeshift hospital in the form of a tent had been set up and, that same year, my sister Lena Gunn taught the first school in a room in a private home. Hopes were so high at the time that Gunn platted one street especially wide at 100 feet to allow an expected rail line to cross over Cady Pass. However, the rail line would never be constructed. In July of 1893, the Gunn Hotel was destroyed by fire, which then spread to every other building in the town except for the train depot. A new hotel index was constructed, and it also included a small store. However, two sources of revenue were coming to an end. The main line of the Great Northern Railway was completed, and the financial panic of 1893 caused many mining operations in the Silver Creek area to be halted. Monte Cristo could no longer be reached via index because a new route had been opened 11 miles further. The difficult times were finally put to an end in 1898 when copper mines called Copper Bell and Sunset were discovered. Index was bustling with activity, and there were anywhere from 800 to 1,000 prospectors there at any given moment. R. Frank Niles arrived in 1899 with the intention of printing the Index Miner, a weekly newspaper of 4 pages that was put out by Charles W. Gorham in Snohomish. Index was experiencing a ferocious mining boom at the turn of the last century. Prospectors, personnel working on some of the newly opened mines, and the typical rabble of grafters and promoters were all packed into the town. Men were sleeping wherever there was a place to lie down, including the hallways of the one hotel. During the height of the boom years, numerous new buildings were being constructed, new mining firms were being launched, and new mines were identified every day. Nevertheless, many of these mines did not contain even the slightest trace of minerals. The Sunset Mine was the most ambitious one, and it was located 6 miles upriver from town. It had been in the possession of a group of farmers from the large marsh that was located between Snohomish and Lowell. They failed miserably in their role as miners. They began transporting ore to the Everett smelter after constructing a tram road to Index, which included the construction of a bridge over the Skykomish. It was not sufficient compensation for the cost of sorting it out, though. They went quickly bankrupt, and the mine was closed down, and the boom, or what was left of it that is, eventually fell apart. It is difficult to conceptualize how quickly the town of Index transformed into a glum and despondent place the moment the dreadful news got out. In spite of the fact that the Index Miner proclaimed what Butte to Montana, Index will soon be to Washington. The only buildings that were still standing in 1901 were a small-scale granite quarry located east of town, a general store, 2 saloons, an assay office, a drugstore, and a single sawmill that had been constructed to saw ties and bridge timbers for the new railroad. 2 men restored the hope of the whole town in 1903 and 1904. With the Great Northern Railway having just arrived in Index, Sylvester Smith was able to choose a suitable site for logging and constructed a sizable combination saw and shingle mill close to the town in 1903. The shingle mill could produce 30,000 shingles a day, while the sawmill could produce 40,000. Additionally, the mill included a power-sufficient electric lighting plant to serve the entire town. At that time, it employed between 40 and 50 men full-time, making it the area's major employer. Johnny Soderberg, who had a general store in the year 1900 and later went on to become the president of Swedish Hospital in Seattle, was the other man who contributed to the stabilization of the economy. In 1904, he started building the Index Granite Company, which was a vast quarry along the Great Northern Rails about 1.5 miles west of the town. The majority of the time, there were 70 men working there, delivering building materials to notable construction projects in Seattle, Spokane, and Everett, including the construction of the state capitol building in Olympia. Soderberg also supplied the town with its first piped spring water, which was a much appreciated service given that the town had fought its second big fire 2 years prior, during which time it did not have a water system. In 1905, in addition to the encouragement of mining, some investors were contemplating the development of hydroelectric power. There were plans to build 2 dams on the North Fork of the Skykomish, but construction was never started. Although there was interest in the concept, the construction of a sizable pulp mill near Sunset Falls on the South Fork was never finished. The proposal called for the generation of energy from the nearby falls. A promotional brochure published in 1905 referred to Index as one of the scenic spots of the world, praising its sublime rugged peaks and wonderful waterfalls. The fishing was great, according to Frank Niles of the Index News. I walked from the back door about 60 feet to the river, and in a distance of perhaps 40 rods, about 660 feet, I caught 45 trout. As a result, hundreds of tourists came by train, stopping at one of the 5 hotels that were operating at the time. The majority of individuals participated in activities like hiking and fishing. Nevertheless, others with a greater sense of adventure, such as members of the Mountaineers, led expeditions to climb the nearby peaks. Photographs taken in 1911 by professional photographer Lee Pickett, who resided in Index, show a lengthy line of climbers, including women wearing long skirts, trekking upward with alpenstocks on Mount Index. In 1902, new owners relaunched the Sunset Copper Company, which continued to function as a key source of employment for the town up until 1935. The work attracted men with families who, unlike the earlier miners, would become permanent citizens of the town, which led to the flourishing of the industry for a couple of years as a result of the increasing demand for copper that resulted from the First World War. In order to staff its quarry, Soderberg attracted workers and stone artisans from as far away as Barre, Vermont, along with their families. Photos reveal intricately carved tombstones that have been carefully polished and are waiting to be sent. Reminiscing about the company's history, Bert Spader recalled, "In 1912 they put in a polishing machine. You know, before that they used to rub them by hand, polish them just like glass." In 1927, new owners continued the business as Western Granite Company. The Smith Mill was purchased by a partnership in 1908, which then greatly expanded and improved the operation before renaming it the Index Galena Company and employing an average of 150 men at its peak. Assets included two Climax steam engines and the rail cars to haul logs as far as 16 miles down from the North Fork Skykomish Valley to the mill. Louis Haybrook had also started another mill on the South Fork Skykomish, but it was a much smaller scale operation. Families of these workers needed the social stability that the town offered, such as a school, hospital, church, and organizations such as the Fishing Game Club and the Independent Order of Odd Fellows. These organizations shared a two-story meeting hall with the Red Men, a fraternal organization that dated back to the Boston Tea Party and was restricted to Caucasians only. A little ironic, don't you think? And terribly offensive. When the town was founded in 1907, there was full political participation, with a mayor-council government paying for a town clerk, law enforcement, and a maintenance man, with volunteers staffing the fire department. It was also planned to open a new two-story school in 1908. Many homes and businesses were built directly on the riverbank, only slightly protected by wooden cribbing. The flood that occurred in 1917 was particularly devastating, taking with it not only many homes and businesses, but also the recently built bridge across the raging river. Floods would continue to cause loss throughout the century and into the current day. Early pioneers came to Index by horse on rough trails until the Great Northern Railway was completed in January of 1893. After that, transcontinental trains and two locals called dinkies provided reliable transportation. The depot was quite literally in the middle of the community. Coming to town by river, as pioneers did in many communities in Snohomish County, was never really a possibility for Index settlers. The river was too swift and hazardous for navigation by steamboat. The county road to Index and Galena was complete in 1911. As automobiles became more common and roads were expanded, including the Evergreen State's first scenic highway, which followed the 1911 road directly through town, competition from the Index Stage Company became serious. That bus service lobbied to expand its route to the top of Stevens Pass via the new highway to Wenatchee that opened on the 11th of July 1925. Once the extension was granted, the Great Northern stopped service on the beloved scenic overland route. In May of 1932, the quarry shed at the Index Galena Company that housed the massive crane caught fire, leaving the stones inside the building immovable. The shed was never rebuilt, and the remaining broken blocks were ground up and sold as chicken grit. As the Great Depression took hold of the economy, failing banks refused to finance what had by then become an obsolete technology. A relatively new material known as reinforced concrete was recognized as being much cheaper for structural use than quarried granite. Frederick Carlson recalled, "In 1929, the mill pond had no logs and the mill shut down. No mill crew, no steam ice plant, and no steam for the engine." Miller Logging Company moved its operations to Index in 1936 and invested $1 million into reopening the Index Galena Mills route up to the North Fork Skykomish to haul logs down to the Great Northern Mainline. But the endeavor was fruitless, and by 1939, logging had completely stopped. Haybrook Ridge was a clear-cut forest that was never replanted, with the little Haybrook Lumber Company on its south and the Index Galena Mill on its north. The trees were just gone for miles surrounding the town and up the valley to the east for years in those days. Copper ore was beginning to be harder to find than gold, and the ores that were found were of a lower quality. Although in any other decade, gold might have been eagerly sought, but War Order L208 banning the mining of non-essential metals made it impossible to extract that precious metal. Many young men from the East Coast moved to the area in 1934 due to the Civilian Conservation Corps camp that was located a quarter mile east of town. These young men assisted in the construction of the Troublesome Creek and San Juan campgrounds for the United States Forest Service, as well as the improvement of miles of roads and forest trails. However, these young men were gone by 1940 when the program would be terminated. A significant setback was caused when State Highway 2 was rerouted in 1933 so that it would go around the town of Index. As a result of this change in the cross-state route, travelers had to take a sharp turnoff and travel an additional mile in order to reach the sleepy little town. More businesses went out of business, but recreation continued to be the primary industry that kept the town alive. Many visitors stopped at the town's lone remaining hotel, the Bush House, on their way farther east. During the Second World War, Garland was used as a Coast Guard training camp, bringing many men to Index who patronized the few remaining businesses. It was a depressing end to a depressing decade when, on a hot August day in 1939, a spark from a train west of town caused a devastating forest fire. Winds blew hot cinders eastward to land on dry shingle roofs. The wood-framed schools were saved by volunteer firefighters, but the church and seven homes were destroyed. Buildings left for the public included one store, a tavern, the Red Men's Hall, fire station, City Hall, and the Bush House Hotel. High school students had transferred to Sultan in 1942, and the beautiful wood-framed schools were demolished in 1955. Only the replacement, a cinder block grade school, remained. In 1962, the sharp curve of the railroad tracks was widened and the grade was raised above street level. This effectively cut the town in half, with each half being hidden from the other. As part of this project, the railroad depot, which was cherished by the locals but rendered unnecessary because trains no longer stopped in Index, was sadly demolished. The annual town picnic, Halloween and Christmas parties for the children, and in 1976, a revival of an Independence Day parade were all supported by the people of the town. The Daughters of Pocahontas, which was the Red Men's Auxiliary, the church, and the Sportsman's Club all survived. The community club, which supported school activities and a Boy Scout troop, survived as well. Excitement and distraction was provided by a 7-car train derailment in 1981 that thankfully did not result in any injuries, and in 1984 by the drilling of a 200-foot tunnel into the granite quarry wall. The Robbins Company was testing a drilling machine destined for a diamond mine in Australia. The broad entry was then closed, and the tunnel was leased to the University of Washington for physics experiments deep underground. Even though the fishery has declined, winter visitors and locals still wade deeply into the river to catch the elusive steelhead trout. However, by late spring, fishing nearly ceases as hundreds of rafters and kayakers put their crafts into roiling whitewater. Still, the strong sense of community emerges when it is needed, most visibly when sandbagging for a flood. Townspeople and visitors from around the region banded together to raise money to buy 139 forested acres. This money was matched in funding by Snohomish County, which helped curate the county's newest park, a recreation and interpretive area that will attract both hikers and school classes. In 2008, citizens rose to the challenge to save the nearby Haybrook Ridge, with its 100-year-old forest, from another clear-cutting. After the passage of the Wild Sky Wilderness Bill in 2008, which places much of the land to the north and east of Index under federal protection, Index has become the gateway to thousands of acres of forest recreation and is once again on the map in the minds of the public, just as it was more than a century ago. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star review and don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss a new episode. Doing so really helps the show to grow and to expand to a new audience, so any help that you can give in that regard will be greatly appreciated. Sources for this episode include the Index Historical Society, HaybrookRidge.org, SeattleNorthCountry.com, History of Skagit and Snohomish County History by William Sidney Sheehock, The Mountaineer, HistoryLink.org, the Index Pickett Historical Museum, and RevisitWA.org. Thank you for listening to episode 142, Index on the Skykomish. Episode 143 will be released next week. A special thank you goes out to Alan Hirsch for providing the music for the podcast. If you have any questions about the show, please contact historyoftheevergreenstatepod@gmail.com. Thank you once again for listening to another episode of the History of the Evergreen State podcast. And until next week, I'm your host and producer, John C.
There's peace on the Skokomish, on the Queets and on the Hull. There's calm on the Nisqually, born of ageless ice and snow. A land that nature loves so much, she stays the whole year round. I trade a royal palace for a shack on Puget Sound. There's Chimicum and Stillicum, where spouts the gooey duck. The singing Stillaguamish and the swirling Skookum Chuck. And Moclips and Copalis, where the razor clams abound. A little bit of heaven is a shack on Puget Sound. A little bit of heaven is a shack on Puget Sound.